Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast. Every Friday, Lima Charlie hosts Defender Fridays, a 30-minute live fireside chat hosted by our founder, Maxime Lamothe-Brassard, who sits down with an industry expert and hands-on practitioner for an unfiltered conversation on a topic related to cybersecurity defense. These chats are so insightful, it made sense to share them on the podcast as well, 1 week after they originally aired. If you'd like to join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. And a reminder, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations where everything is built API first. You can think of it as a backend for your MSSP that enables you to scale with confidence as your business grows. You can get started today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it.
So welcome everybody to Defender Fridays. Usual kind of mini pitch here is we get to talk to all kinds of interesting people on the Defender side of the ecosystem with Lima Charlie. And so we kind of wanted to bring into the circle more and more people. The goal here is not to do like a slideshow, but really to have a discussion. So hey, if you have questions, like do feel free to jump in, all that good stuff. And so this week is an interesting chat. So Ezra Woods, thanks for coming in. Do you want to maybe do a quick intro about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Ezra Woods. I'm a security engineer for a company called Grand Canyon Education. We mostly work with like universities, so primarily Grand Canyon University based in Phoenix. I myself am based in the Bay Area. I work remote. I've been there for coming up on a little bit over a year.
Nice. And I know the thing you kind of wanted to talk about is sort of, on one hand, I could say like it's an oldie but a goodie, but like the interesting thing is that, yeah, it's not new, but it's also just so relevant still. Particularly about like remote access tools, right? So let's just get into it. What did you have in mind?
Yeah, so I'm going to say the word RMM a lot. So remote monitoring and management tools, huge broad scope for that term. And like you said, it is an oldie. It's been around for a while, but it's still really successful, statistically speaking, and broadening in the overall scope. So like one number I love to throw out there, like how many remote management tools do you think there are, like currently available, if you were to go search and buy one?
Man, that's going to be a really long tail. Yeah, it's probably, 20 of them are 90%, and then the last 10% is like 500, I agree.
Yeah, so there's a repo called lolrmm.io. It's similar to like the Lulbin repo, if you've ever heard of it. It just tracks them. Right now it has, I think it was 272 that are in their list. So not even, there's no way to know what the actual total is, but that's how many they have tracked. And over the past, I guess, probably around 4 or 5 months now, me and a few others have been doing a lot of research on the platforms themselves, and it's kind of terrifying, because you can tell that some of these tools are just thrown together, like, without any concern about how it could be used or the implications of how they're setting up the platform. And people are using them. Like these aren't, there are some that I'm sure, like you mentioned, like there's probably three customers for, but some of the bigger ones have really concerning, architecture for their actual product beyond also them just being really, really easy for people to use for malicious purposes as well.
And when you say platform, you're sort of thinking about not the thing on the endpoint, but kind of everything else, right?
Yeah, exactly. So for the ones that are like cloud managed, so like there's some sort of management plane online. Some of them are really concerning. And also, despite it being an old tactic, the amount of incidents, like public ones that have some sort of RMM tool used in the attack chain is still increasing. So that's one thing, I think it was last year that CrowdStrike had in their threat report that it was around 70% increase year over year before 2023 in the amount of incidents that are using remote management tools.
That's interesting. I guess that would be mainly because they are official tools. So, you know, hiding in plain sight, they're all signed, they're all well known. That would be the big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's definitely like a legitimacy thing because like you're kind of alluding to for most EDRs or whatever detection you use, it's unless you configure it to, it's not going to flag on any of these tools because they are legitimate. And from like a heuristic perspective, so many different organizations use them that it's not like a new signature within the environment. It's just another tool being used.
Nice. So, I mean, as a, you know, like as a naive but probably pretty decent first approach, I guess just you know, hitting that repo of like not lolbins but lolrmm, and saying, hey, let's start detecting all of these things, and then subtracting the what I would hope every organization maybe has a max of like two that they use kind of thing. That would be a pretty good way to start looking at defending yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the same thing we did a while back that I mean, yeah, we recommend at the very beginning, like just figuring out what the business actually needs to use can be its own challenge. Because that was something that I remember I had to do that was a little challenging. Because it is like you really shouldn't need more than a few, but some people argue, no, I need this one for this specific thing, or you know, all sorts of stuff like that. But even within that, like even once you get to that point where you have all of the ones that you know you're supposed to have in the environment. You know, you've set up detections for all of the others that, you know, you either get alerted or you block them from running in the environment. For some of the tools, it's still really hard to tell if when it's running in your environment, if it's actually connected to your tenant. And it depends. This is tool dependent, and this is something that again we've been looking at for some of the tools that we use is. It's kind of ambiguous when they're making outbound connections whether or not it's actually to your tenant or not. So one of the real, I mean, the most used RMM tool is Screen Connect. Luckily for that one, you can kind of tell where it's going somewhat. They have a bunch of different relays that you can see, like if it's making connections to the one that is associated with your tenant, then it's most likely yours. But some of the relays aren't. Like they're shared. So you can tell if it is the one that you normally connect to, but you can't tell if it's not someone else on that same relay. And yeah, so like that we've looked at that specific telemetry for like 12 or 15 of them now, and it's kind of hit or miss whether or not you can determine that. So it's like a whole nother issue. Once you even get to that point, it's like, okay, well, this is the one that's supposed to be on my machine, but I don't actually know if the connections it's making are, you know, going to us.
Yeah, that's brutal. I have not thought about
Yeah.
that level of it because, yeah, I mean, you look at the network connections. Is there a world, or is it even worth trying to say, hey, we're going to try to parse the configuration?
Yeah.
Hopefully most of them have like a clean configuration on this, but maybe some of them you can provide it as a command line argument, which is a whole different issue, right?
Yeah, so that's actually something we do because we use TeamViewer in our environment, and that is something you can see. At least I don't know about all the other ones. I haven't looked into it super deep for all of them, but you can see what it's configured to connect to in like a plain text configuration file. That being said, I don't know if you could manipulate that and still connect somewhere else. I'm sure there's, you know, a whole bunch of nuance there at that point. But at that point, you kind of have other issues like, but yeah, for some of them, yes. I don't know about all of them though.
That feels like that it feels like having a comprehensive solution to that is a whole company that needs to do. You know, it's not.
Honestly, I could see that being successful as its own thing because it is like a you can probably get like 90% of the way there managing it on your own, but it's going to be hours, especially and depending on the org size and the team size too, like. This is something that we've done with, I mean, our team is bigger than most, so we've had the resources to look into a lot of this. But yeah, I can't imagine, you know, as a like a medium-sized org with only a few people on the team, like trying to narrow down this many tools, try to figure out, how the one you actually use even works. Yeah, that'd be crazy.
Yeah, that's probably incentive to reduce the number of tools that you're expecting in your environment, which, yeah, it's a good thing. I'm curious. So I'm curious about the kind of the first, I think, statement you were kind of making about like the platform side of things. I'm curious about what have you found in the platform side of things? Anything interesting there?
Yeah, so me and like the guy that I researched stuff the most with was actually my boss, Mike Banrod. We presented at B-Sides Albuquerque about some of this because so I some of them I'll say the platform name for it because it's just like public stuff you can find, but some of them I won't mention the platform name. So Screen Connect specifically is actually kind of trivial to enumerate all of the customers of a platform. So when you sign up for Screen Connect, they give you a subdomain as like your quote tenant, which is kind of a terrible idea for most products because it took when we were doing research for a presentation, it took about 6 hours to enumerate 22,000 different customers of Screen Connect. And that includes like it's trivial to find out what the like full company name is. And then, of course, like what sector that they work in. Beyond that, for Screen Connect specifically, the way they set up their platform, it's not a bug. It's considered like a feature that anyone can connect to any tenant if you have the specific like connection ID for that tenant, which is publicly exposed if you know the company's subdomain. So it just opens up a whole bunch of like potential phishing scenarios because if you know their, if you can find their help desk number, which isn't hard for most organizations, you yourself can install Screen Connect like on an endpoint that you control, connect to a target company Screen Connect like instance, and then call their help desk as someone needing like remote help and go through that avenue for kind of social engineering them, which is just kind of terrible that you can do that without any sort of authentication or anything.
Yeah, that's kind of scary. There's no secret being exchanged. Oh
Well,
man.
there is a secret. It's just publicly exposed, which is just ridiculous because it's so funny too. I don't even know that there's a bunch of other stuff too that's like on the page that you can see. If you know the subdomain and the link for them, like you can even see what license they have. So you can see if it's if a company is a free trial or paid, and then if it's paid, what specific like areas, like if it's US or outside of the US, and then the specific license for how many devices, like it's a whole thing. And that's just Screen Connect. So I mentioned Screen Connect because it's the biggest. It is by far the biggest tool. And I know they're called ConnectWise now, but it's so hard for me to say that when I'm thinking Screen Connect, but they're also the most abused. So I can't remember. Think it was. I can't remember which company it was, but Screen Connect. Oh no, it was Proofpoint. Proof from Proofpoint's data, Screen Connect over the past few years has risen like catastrophically above every other tool, just because of how easy it is to set up. So the fact that they're both like the number one in terms of abuse potential and also their platform is kind of suspiciously made to me is just kind of terrifying.
Yeah, it's I think it there's also going to be a shift. Okay, so you could look at that type of attack and say, well, it requires very much a human. It's kind of like social engineering adjacent kind of attack, which is fair, but I would kind of argue that, well, what's the new technology that is really, really, really great at imitating humans and doing that at scale that's coming up? And so I feel like that's going to shift a whole bunch of attacks that historically weren't used all that much because you needed like a meat person there. And now, they're going to be running these attacks like at volume using LLMs, and it's
Yeah,
going to get weird.
absolutely. And I think It was almost 2 years ago now, but the MGM hack is kind of exemplifies how it's really not that crazy of an idea for this to work out, because that was how that went down, was through just one phishing like social engineering call to a help desk. They installed a remote management tool and then just went from there. And like you're saying, I don't think it'd be hard at all for someone competent to automate that using something like 11 labs and whatever other model to just generate that voice on the other end. Yeah. The other thing too is, so, and that's just for, so Screen Connect's one of the biggest ones. That's just for them, where it still requires that interaction. We have found at least one platform that wouldn't require that interaction that we're going to just through a disclosure process for. It's not nearly as big as Screen Connect, but their part of their API is completely unauthenticated when it comes to how endpoints are registered and managed, which means there's ways to manipulate like data that's within the management portal itself. So I won't mention the name for that one, because like again, we're actually going through the disclosure process for it, but that's just the first one that we've found that has that issue. We've only looked at like around 20 of the 270 in that huge list, which is just really concerning.
Right. So
Because
that
if
means
that
you
one is
could.
that way, I. Oh, go ahead.
So that means that you could essentially, like, hypothetically say, "Hey, I know, what the CFO's name is, so I'm going to register a new Screen Connect that looks like the CFO, and maybe call help desk so they do something on there or something like that, right?"
For Screen Connect, yes. For this other tool, it is essentially like, think of it like an injection vulnerability, where you can inject data into the management plane itself, which it would still require some sort of like user interaction, but not specifically like some phone call. So for example, if you have like whatever tool and it like lists out all of the endpoints that you have available, this would be a way to essentially change the content on that site from, instead of being like all of those endpoints, it'd be like a security warning with a link. And then they would click on that link. Like it is just a way to manipulate the
Holy shit.
content on like the entire management plane. And so it was literally like the fifth tool that we looked at. We discovered this by accident. Because we were just looking at like all the binaries that they give you for the different types of agents, like different host architectures and stuff, and we accidentally connected to someone else's tenant, just testing like to see how their agents work. And I was like, that's weird. I didn't that doesn't make any sense. I should mention this other tool also doesn't do any verification for the domain that you like get when you sign up. So for a while, my tenant was Microsoft dot and then the tool name, just for testing, because they don't care, they don't look at it. And there's a lot of them for that very specific thing, where they don't verify the actual organization. That's most of them. They don't really seem to put much effort into it, unless it's like one of the big ones like Screen Connect.
Man, that would be a great type of attack, right? Like Microsoft, target dot, deploy it there. So even if you're looking in the network, a defender might look at that and say, "Well, Screen Connect is well known," or whatever the vendor is well
Yeah.
known. Microsoft, like, yeah, it all lines up.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And for that specific thing, like I was saying, there's a few of them that are like that, but there's at least one tool we found that if a threat actor found the same issue that we're hoping they fix soon, it would be game over for most people that use that tool. Because you can also enumerate them pretty easily. And it's kind of like 50-50 if. Or the tool, like if the customers of it are easy to enumerate. A lot of them are really, really trivial, which is also just concerning.
I mean, it sounds like hopefully, the disclosure goes through, it gets fixed, all of that. But after that, it sounds like that's a great talk. I'd go watch that
Yeah.
at a conference. So.
Yeah, we will hopefully submit that to. So in Phoenix, we have a local conference called CactusCon that we really love. We try to present there every year. And if it doesn't get accepted there, we'll try DEF CON and we'll see. You never know.
That's super cool. So you know, having seen all of those things, beyond, I think it always kind of goes back to like software hygiene is probably the biggest bang for your buck here. Is there other types of detections or more proactive defenses that you've observed that are effective for at least like some of those things or more than others or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing absolutely effective in 99% of the cases is just full application control. So that'll look different depending on the organization and is really hard to do. But I don't think there's really much you can do outside of that, because even if you go right now and set up like an absolutely amazing rule set for all of the tools in like that repo that I mentioned, in 3 weeks, there's going to be another tool with a valid cert that allows remote control. Like it's not so you're going to be playing whack-a-mole essentially. Like if you do anything other than strict application allow listing. That being said, that's really hard to do in most organizations. Like I don't know many orgs that have successfully done that without either like breaking a ton of stuff along the way, or having to, like spend a ton of money doing it. I won't mention just for everyone's awareness, Windows Defender application control is essentially free if you have any Windows licenses. So it is included in like whatever the base license is. It's just really hard to set up and manage over time, and it just gets more complicated the longer you go. But yeah, I don't know if there's much you can do beyond that.
I mean, application control stuff like that, I think is the holy grail for a lot of folks. And I think the ironic bit maybe is the easiest time it is to implement this is at the very beginning of an organization. And at the very beginning of an organization is the time people are least likely to care about it, right? So it's,
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's the thing too that I normally recommend to people is like, if you are going to try to do application control in your environment, don't even get rid of the moderately bad stuff that's currently there. So we kind of, and this is the way that we've approached it, is like just figure out literally everything that's in your environment. Make sure it's all approved at the very beginning, and then start narrowing down one by one. Just because that way you're not going to ruffle any feathers with the actual like implementation of application control. It'll be with whatever changes you do after the fact, where you're like, okay, it's time to cut off this one, cut off this one, cut off this one, and just reduce from that scope. Yeah, great mention in the chat too by Luke. Aaron Locker is one of the, it's the name is funny. It's the guy's name, and he didn't want it to be named that. But it's just like a tool for managing Windows Defender application control. Yeah, it's a really good tool. There's also, I forget what the repo is called, but there's a like a policy builder on GitHub as well that's a lot more intuitive than like the built-in policy builder. There's a lot of resources for it. It's just most DIY for Windows Defender application control.
Very interesting. Very cool. Sorry, it's giving me ideas of stuff to build. That's always good. So where kind of looking more towards the future, where like what area of is it RMM do you think you still have like a good year or two of investigation into that side of things, or is there any other areas you're thinking of looking at? Or
So, yeah, for just the regular RMM stuff, yes, there will be more in the future for me, just for the platforms themselves. But one of the things that we included in our B-sides presentation was the fact that if you think about it, EDR itself is kind of an RMM on steroids. And this is something that has very, very recently actually been used in a few campaigns was threat actors registering a new EDR tool within an environment to shut off whatever the original one is. Which is kind of crazy in its own right, but we we tested it and it's really effective. So the specific example that I've been giving out to people is me and Mike. We tested, so we had CrowdStrike running on a host with like full protection policies, uninstall protection, all that sort of stuff, and then installed Cisco AMP, or previously Cisco AMP, now Cisco Secure Client, and added the hash of CrowdStrike Falcon to Cisco's block list, and it killed it immediately. And the craziest thing, you know, this does, I always mention this does require like full admin rights, right? Like this isn't something as you're going to do initial access. This is going to be, you know, you've already escalated. You're trying to get rid of the sensor before you deploy whatever ransomware kit. But on the CrowdStrike side, there was absolutely nothing for telemetry. There was no detections, and on like the actual logs, it just looked like it just turned off. So that's another thing too that I'll always recommend to people is you need to have some type of alert or detection set up for when something new is on a host and then the sensor goes offline, like within some type of time period, because that's something that's actively being exploited right now. Props to Cisco. So this was all done with a free trial, I should mention. We tested like 9 different tools, similar Cisco, Elastic, Trend Micro, a bunch of them, and they all give out free trials like candy. So you don't even need like real credentials. We signed up for them with a Proton Mail account, and they're honestly more functional than a lot of the RMMs are. So it's really useful from like a threat actor's perspective. But luckily, Cisco, they stopped doing this now. They're doing more validation for their free trials, so it's harder to get that. But that's kind of another next area of research to put more effort into for us is the EDR side of it as well.
That's very cool. That's very cool. Yeah, I was wondering if you needed a license for like for the other one, free trials. Oh man, that's scary. Cool. Is there anything that we kind of missed in the discussion that you thought like, hey, was cool or something like that, or?
I think that covered most of it, honestly, that I can think of at least right now.
All right, good stuff. Good stuff. So if folks want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Honestly, any Twitter/X or LinkedIn. I threw in the chat one of the repos that we made for remote management tool testing, and it also has a write-up, like a bigger write-up on the EDR stuff. But yeah, LinkedIn or Twitter, I'll respond to pretty much anything. So
Awesome, awesome. That's really good. I like seeing like people that do research and just post it all on GitHub like that. That's super cool. Awesome. Well, thanks for coming. And that was super interesting. And we will see everybody next week for the next Defender Fridays.
awesome. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Have a good one.
And that brings us to the end of another Defender Fridays discussion. Support our show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend, subscribe or give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening from. If you want to be a part of the conversation and join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you in the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.